George, short.
You may want to tell him. He's been sick and he's trying to help me.
What?
Those whose names I call, please take seats toward the back of the courtroom. Deborah White. Michael Joy.
Hold on. Make sure the juror gets out. Oh, Ms. White?
Michael Joy. Tracy Newberry. Rebecca McDougall. May Gillis. Randall Appolter. Amanda Shell.
All right. Council, Mr. Deegan, unless there's a special request, I'll forego a calling of the roll. I believe that the jurors remaining in the jury box have been those that have been selected according to law.
Say we'll forego calling the roll.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, in the back of the courtroom, you're not on this jury, so at this point you are free to leave. We do appreciate the time and effort you've given us this afternoon, and we will be in contact with you if and when we need your services again. Thank you all very much. Sir, you have to sit in the back two rows, please. You three jurors, you can have a seat back in the regular jury box, if you would, please. And earlier I wanted you all to, when we took a break, to sit in the same seat. You no longer have to do that. Some of those seats, if you don't already know, are under a heating and or air conditioning vent, and so some of them are a little bit draftier than some of the other seats. And you know, anywhere within the jury box that you want to sit, that might give you a view that you would like to have of the courtroom. To give you what I refer to as preliminary instructions. These instructions will apply to you now until the conclusion of the case. A trial must be conducted in accordance with the law of the land. The rules apply equally to the litigants, the witnesses, the lawyers, the judge, and the jury. It is your duty under your oath to conform your conduct during the trial to the rules which I will now relate to you. Do not make up your mind or form an opinion as to the issues to be decided by you until the trial is concluded, and you've heard all the evidence, the arguments of counsel, and the instructions of the court. You should not discuss the case among yourselves during the trial, either here in the courtroom or beyond the courthouse. Wait until the trial is concluded, and you've retired to your jury room to deliberate and consider your verdict when all of you are present at one and the same time. Avoid discussion of the case or the trial with anyone who is not a member of the jury, not even members of your own family. Do not make on your own account a private investigation of any kind or conduct an experiment of any kind in an effort to inform yourself concerning any fact. Do not read a newspaper story or article or listen to a news media broadcast concerning the trial or allow yourself to receive any information concerning this trial outside of this courtroom. I wish I didn't have to dwell on this topic, but recent events around the country and new developments in technology compel me to point out that some common practices many of you enjoy are strictly forbidden in your role as jurors. You may not, under any circumstances, have your cell phones, Blackberries, iPhones, or the like on when court is in session. Moreover, whether you are here or away from the court during recesses or overnight, you may not Google, Twitter, tweet, text message, blog, post, or anything else with those gadgets about or concerning anything to do with this case. The point of all of this is to confine your judgment to what takes place here in the courtroom. It would be extremely unfair to base your decisions on matters that neither side have examined and tested. That is what due process is all about. Disobeying this instruction could cause a mistrial, meaning all of our efforts would have been wasted, and we would have to start all over again with a new trial before a new jury. If you were to cause a mistrial by violating this order, you could be required to pay all the costs of these proceedings and perhaps even be punished for contempt of court. What you may do is advise anyone who needs to know, such as family members, employers, employees, schools, teachers, or daycare providers, that you are a juror in the case and the judge has ordered you not to discuss it until you've reached a verdict and been discharged. At that point, you will be free to discuss this case or investigate anything about it to your heart's content. Ma'am, you're not supposed to be taking notes at this point, please. This means that during the trial, you must not conduct any independent research about this case, the matters in this case, the individuals or entities involved in this case. In other words, you should not consult dictionaries or reference materials, search the internet, websites, blogs, or use any other electronic tools to obtain information about this case or to help you decide this case. Please do not try to find out information from any source outside the confines of this courtroom. Until you retire to deliberate, you may not discuss this case with anyone, not even members of the fellow jurors. After you retire to deliberate, you may begin to discuss the case with your fellow jurors, but you cannot discuss the case with anyone else until you've returned a verdict and the case is at end. The oath that you have just taken requires you to see to it for yourself that your sole and only information concerning this case comes to you while you're all together, all present at one and the same time, acting as a jury in the presence of the court, the parties, and the attorneys. In order that each juror and the court and the attorneys trying this case may at all times be completely free from any suspicion that they have violated the rules concerning a discussion of this case with a juror, you should not permit anyone who is not a member of the jury to approach you and converse with you while you're in and about the courthouse during the trial, whether that conversation concerns the trial or not. If anyone tries to talk to you about the trial, tell that person that their conduct is improper. If they insist or continue to talk to you or in your hearing about the trial, you should report such conduct to the court immediately. Perhaps many of you are acquainted with the court or with the attorneys trying this case, the witnesses or the litigants. If we do not stop and talk to you when we meet you in and about the courthouse or elsewhere during the trial, you are to know that we are not trying to snub or avoid you, but on the contrary are attempting to adhere strictly to the rule which bars conversation with you during the trial. In order to avoid the opportunity for others to innocently approach you and attempt to engage you in conversation while attending the court as a juror, you should go directly to the jury room upon arrival at the courthouse. When leaving the courthouse, you should go directly to your home or other destination. You are permitted to take notes during the trial. You are not required to take notes, but you are permitted to take notes if you choose to do so. Please remember that the notes that you take are to be an aid in your memory, not a substitute for it. Therefore, do not try to write down every word that is said. Listen to the witnesses and watch them, and remember their testimony. You may take notes if you choose to, in order to help your memory, but it is your memory upon which you should rely in recalling the testimony of the various witnesses. If you choose to take notes, your notes must be your own. Do not look at another juror's notes, and do not share or show your notes to another juror. I mentioned earlier that you must not discuss the case among yourselves until you begin to deliberate at the end of the trial. By the same token, if you begin to compare notes before the end of the trial, then that is a form of deliberation. So for the same reason, you must not look at each other's notes or compare notes during the trial. Each of you will be given a notepad and a pen after opening statements. When you get the pad, write only your name on the first sheet of paper. If you choose to take notes on the second and all subsequent pages thereafter. This way, when the notepads are collected and then passed back out by the bailiff can look at the first page, see your name, and pass that notebook out to the appropriate juror without seeing any of your notes. The bailiff will collect your notepads at the lunch break and at evening breaks and redistribute them when we reassemble. No one will see your notes. Not the bailiff, not me, not the attorneys. Your notes will be destroyed after the trial. Take notes only of the evidence. You will not be permitted to take notes of opening statements, closing arguments, or the court's instructions. And remember, this is optional. You do not have to take notes. If at any time you fail to hear either a question or an answer, make such fact known to the court by raising your hand or speaking out. Do not guess or speculate as to what you think a question or an answer may have been. Make certain you know in your own mind what each question and each answer was. During the trial, counsel may object to the admission of evidence or ask the court to rule on certain points of trial procedure here in your presence. When this occurs, the court is obligated to rule on these matters. But let it be emphasized that the way in which the court rules must not be taken as an indication that the court favors one side or the other. The court at all times stands completely indifferent and impartial between the litigants. Tomorrow morning, counsel will make their opening statements, in which they will state the facts which they believe the evidence will show. What they have to say is not evidence, and you should not consider it as such. The evidence will be presented to you during the trial through witnesses and exhibits. You should, however, give counsel, and when I say counsel, I mean Mr. Diggin, of course, you should give counsel for both sides your undivided attention during their opening statement. What they have to say will be of great value and assistance to you in understanding and relating the testimony of each individual witness to the total evidence in the case and thus to the facts which you are to determine. I think given everything, this is probably the best place to stop today. And so we will resume at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I want to ask you each to be back here shortly before 9 o'clock in the morning. And on your way out, the bailiff may have, I don't know whether he has other things to do, but he needs to tell you where you need to park tomorrow. When we recess today, you'll need to go out through that door. He'll probably take you into the jury room and at least talk to you about that. And with that, we will see you in the morning shortly before 9 o'clock. Thank you. Not now. Everybody stays in the courtroom until the jury's cleared the floor. Please have a seat. Is there anything we need to deal with out of the presence of the jury?
Your Honor, I'd like to take up an issue for tomorrow just so it goes a little smoother. The jail calls, we already discussed that there is a disc that contains a number of jail calls. I have made a disc that only includes four of those jail calls, two of which the state intends to use in case in chief. One would be for possible rebuttal. That being the case, would you, I would be offering that with Mark Jarrett, because there is at least one call that I would not be presenting in my case in chief, I didn't know if you wanted me to go ahead and leave it on there, or if we thought it might be better if I took that off and put it on a separate disc.
My thought is that you need to take if you're not going to introduce one of those phone calls in your case in chief, it should not be on the disc because the jury would, assuming that they get admitted, would be entitled to take the disc back to the jury room to listen or bring it in here depending upon how it can be done. So we don't want evidence that's not admitted on a disc.
So just to make clear, just tomorrow if I have two discs, then that would be what it would be for. I'll go ahead and do that. In addition, last night I also found one of the, or maybe both of them, I can't remember now, but the defendant in the jail phone calls makes a statement about the time that he's facing. Tonight I'm going to take those statements out of those jail calls. It's not as easy. I tried to do it before. It's not as easy as redacting the videos. This is a special system. But I plan to just take those statements that the defendant makes about the possible sentence out of those jail calls and place that on the new discs just to let the court know.
Mr. Deegan, do you want that taken out?
Well, I could probably save him some time. 25-1-17, unless he's gotten a warrant, he's not permitted to have them. They're not permitted to be used.
I don't believe a warrant is necessary.
Right here.
And I would have Mr. Jarrett to testify tomorrow regarding those statements.
What's the code section you're citing, Mr.?
25-1-17. Monitoring of inmate telephone calls, procedures, restrictions. And under 4 it says it may be only disclosed to law enforcement agency pursuant to an order of the court when disclosure is necessary for the investigation, prevention, or prosecution of a crime or to safeguard the orderly operation of the correctional institution. But it must be made pursuant to an order of the court. Otherwise, it's limited to the commissioner of corrections or the administrator of the jail and his designee at the jail.
I believe the defendant stated, Your Honor, that code section is directed towards the Division of Corrections. This was from a regional jail facility.
So you're saying 25-117 deals with people in prison as opposed to people in the regional jail?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Deegan?
I doubt that. I mean, they're under the DOC now. That's all one big happy family of agents. It's a sub corporation.
Okay. Well, I'll have to check the language of that statute to see.
And if that's not the case, then I would absolutely object to any redaction. Because I intend to, if he's going to use the redacted version of the video, once I'm able to view the rest of it, I'm going to play the whole thing. I don't see there's any need to redact anything.
So the 4 phone calls that the state's indicated they're wanting to use, and now they're wanting to only use, what, 3?
2 would be used in the case in chief.
Okay,
sure.
2. You don't want them redacted, Mr. Deegan?
No. And I don't want the video redacted either.
Well, right, but we're not talking about the video right now. We're just talking about the 2.
No, well, I'm more concerned with the fact that they don't have a court order.
We'll deal with that. We'll deal with that. But you don't, if they're admitted, you don't want them redacted. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't want anything tampered with because there's too much tampering going on with digital stuff. And no one's certifying anything as authentic. And I would like that to stop because you don't know where it ends in digital when you start tampering.
Do you understand, though, that some of that information may be what would be considered to be prejudicial to you?
Everything he's trying to use is prejudicial to prove certain elements other than the crime. So, I mean, what's it matter at this point? I mean, they're going to have home confinement on the stand. So they'll already know that I had a plea deal at least and that I was on home confinement. I mean, how much more prejudicial of something can you get? So what, I made a statement, I'm facing 1 to 3 years. Whoop-de-doo. I mean, that's more prejudicial.
The fact that you're on home confinement?
Yeah.
You done with the jury? Mm-hmm. Can you have that guy? All right. Well, sounds like Mr. Deegan doesn't want any redaction.
Additionally, Your Honor, I had received the copy or the hard copy version of the disc that Mr. Wharton had given to you. I have it in the room back there. I'm not sure if you were going to look through that or what you wanted.
I don't understand what you're asking.
There was a hard copy version of the exhibits that was at issue.
Being printed out, you printed out the 1,300 pages of exhibits.
That's correct.
Okay. So what's the question?
I know you. We had given you the disc. I didn't know what you wanted to do going forward.
I thought Mr. Deegan wanted the the 1,300 pages?
I'll provide the 1,300 pages to the defendant.
Okay.
Is that paper or digital? Because digital, I have a problem reading documents on that computer.
I'm thinking they said they printed it out.
It's printed.
Okay.
Out.
That's fine.
All right. Is there anything else?
Your Honor, if I can put something on the record related to, did you have a juror named Kent Hutton, prospective juror?
Madam Clerk, you got the full list. I only have the ones that were called up.
Is it talking about potential jurors or the ones that's on?
60 that came in.
60 that came in. What was the name of them?
What was the name again?
Kent Hutton.
Kent Hutton.
Number 25, Your Honor.
Yeah, I got a Kent.
Yes.
Okay, I don't know where he stood in it, but he had posted jury duty this afternoon on Facebook, just simply the phrase jury duty. And the concern that I had, Steve Stevens, who was assigned as the bailiff who's with Mr. Deegan, had clicked like and that popped up and I saw that. And I wasn't sure if he was involved in the jury, but I didn't want there to be an issue with any relationship between the individual who's guarding Mr. Deegan and a potential juror, but if he's not on the jury and if he isn't one that was called up, it's probably not an issue. I just wanted to bring it to the court's attention.
I don't see him as one of the jurors. Okay. All right. Anything else?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
I want to make sure that he has them so that he can't say.
I'll work.
Oh, yeah.
I'll work. Don't worry.